Everyone, welcome to The Final Four is Not on the Schedule. I'm your host, Eric, alongside with expert analyst, Rod. Thanks for joining us on the best MSU basketball podcast featuring an in-depth recruiting, game matchup, and post-game analysis. We dive deep to give you the best tools to enjoy the Spartans and impress your friends and family. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod here to discuss Michigan State's 61-55 loss to Rutgers at Madison Square Garden. Michigan State drops to 6-6 in the Big Ten, and Rutgers goes to 8-4 in the Big Ten. Before we begin, I just want to thank all those of you who support us. We really appreciate it. If you want to go and support the show with some gifts, you can go to finalfoursnottheschedule.com/support. You can give a one-time gift via PayPal or Venmo, or monthly donation through Patreon. I also encourage you to go to Nudge Printing. Nudge Printing is owned and operated by two Michigan State alums, Gabe and Brittany. They started the company about 10 years ago, and they make high quality screen prints for t-shirts, sweatshirts. They have vintage, really cool Gruff Sparty stuff, all the other kind of things like tuck cumming, all those sorts of things you need for your tailgating and for just wearing around the house and around town. I've got a couple of these myself. They are really excellent. The sweatshirt is super soft and very wearable. It's great. And so I'd highly recommend you check it out. For listeners of the show, you can get 20% off checkout by typing in Final Four at checkout. And, you know, let's talk about this game. It was a bullet that Michigan State dodged in the sense that they got to play Madison Square Garden versus going to Rutgers in the rack. I don't know where to begin. Michigan State shot 20-58, 34% from the field. A really miserable 4-21 from three, 19%. One of those was kind of a garbage one at the very end by Pierre Brooks. So, truly terrible performance from a shooting standpoint from outside. And a lot of those really wide open looks, especially earlier in the game in the first half when neither team was really doing anything, an opportunity to get some points on the board. Rutgers shot about as badly as they did the first matchup in Breslin at East Lansing. They were 3-16 from three. They were 37% from the field, but they were pretty good from the line. Not great. They shot a little under 65%, but they got there a ton. Partly because of the end of the game strategy, where they were 22 or 34. Michigan State just trying to come back. And then you're rebounding. Michigan State rebounded Rutgers by 10, had 10 more field goal attempts. But again, that's partially because Rutgers was getting fouled. And turnovers were a little bit of a situation. Michigan State had 14, Rutgers 11. Overall, there's just that portion in the middle of the second half where Rutgers caught up. They were down 8, they caught up and then passed Michigan State. And Michigan State just couldn't get back. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to ever throw it on one person, but it sure felt to me that, you know, Michigan State is driven largely by the point guard play, and point guard play with Hogard was not very good. I mean, he had 5 turnovers. He had
100%.
He had a couple assists. Now, in some respects, he didn't get some assists because people were missing shots they would normally get, but there was just a, I don't know. It was a bad performance that he was putting. Passes were like, you know, Sissoko, who I didn't think played badly. I thought he played pretty well. Put him, you know, like bounce passes at his feet. You know, he's got to try and get down and catch it and then make some move. I don't know. I mean, there's just a lot of, I think part of that is Rutgers sort of what they do. You know, they sort of make things difficult.
Well,
but
no, not on those. You're exactly right. There's an old Judd line that I think is tailor-made for what you were just talking about in regard to AJ trying to force the ball to Mahdi on 2 or 3 occasions. KYP. It's the acronym stands for Know Your Personnel.
Yeah.
As a point guard, anybody really, you have to know what your teammates are capable of doing and what they're not capable of doing. And that first possession of the game was telling.
Yep.
Because that was a horrible decision to try to make that play to Mahdi. And you saw Mahdi after it, he pointed with his finger up. He was right. What AJ should have done was lob it, put it at the rim, let Mahdi go get it. Instead, he tries to zip one. That's never going to happen. That the spacing was bad for it to begin with. And then you have to understand, Mahdi does not have great hands. You'd have to be a Chris Webber or a tractor trailer to pull that, or Zach Randolph to pull that kind of pass in.
Yeah.
And Mahdi isn't that, not even close. So that's, I start with that. There's some other things we'll talk about. But I start with that. we mentioned it lately. You know, I felt like AJ maybe had made a little bit of a turn in his individual play, like getting opportunities for himself in the Purdue game. Well, that didn't happen much in this one. And he's still really struggling right now to do his primary job, which is to make his teammates better, to create opportunities for others. It was just a poor game.
Yeah.
Very poor. And I'm going to, there's no other way to say it. They need him to be much better than this. It is as simple as that. And I do want, there were situations in this game where there were obvious plays to be made that he did not make. I don't know if it's he didn't see them, but he's normally a guy with pretty good court vision. You know, what I'm talking about is there were some pick and roll instances where MSU had a big wide open at the rim and AJ made the wrong decision.
Yeah.
It happened multiple times. Can't happen. If guys are just missing shots, okay. And they missed a lot of shots today. We acknowledge that. But especially when that's happening, more than ever, you need your point guard to be able to make the plays that result in easy baskets, easy opportunities. He didn't do that. So I start with him for sure. I think you had the right place to start. That's where it sits for me. Of the three things that I thought hurt MSU, well, four things I thought hurt MSU the most. You touched on the second one, and we touch on it every game, and we'll return to it when we go over the keys. Three-point shooting.
Yeah.
They just missed a lot of open shots. Some days it's going to happen. It's very unfortunate that it happened today, but I thought MSU actually did an okay job in generating decent looks. They just didn't hit them. I mean, Joey Hauser, 0-for-4. Aikens, 1-for-4. Hogard, 0-for-4. Hogard shouldn't be taking four of them. Yeah. That's where you start with that. Malik Hall, 0-for-2. I mean, the only guy who was really dialed in at all was Tyson Walker at 2-for-5. So that we've said it many times. If Michigan State can't get some level of production from three, they're going to struggle to score enough points. And lo and behold, 4-for-21 from three, you score 55 points. Not enough to win, even against Rutgers, even against in a game that I thought MSU played okay for the most part defensively. Not great.
Yeah.
In the second half. I thought they were great in the first half. The primary reason I didn't think they were great in the second half was late in the game. This is my third point. They couldn't handle Paul Mulcahy. I had visions. It was a different style, but I had visions of that game at the rack last year.
Right.
He just took over and they tried different guys on him and it didn't matter. That's a team thing. You know, you've got to be better. Like that last bucket he scored where he had Malik on him and Malik was trying to force him to his left and he just wouldn't surrender to it, waited for the pick and then was able to get right. Well, your team defense has to be better. You got to be able to get on him and surround him. And MSU couldn't do it. Credit to him because he made a number of great plays. I mean, he took over that game down the stretch when they needed it, because it's not like they were getting great offensive production from anybody either, but he gave them that when they needed it most. And then I'll say the fourth thing that I thought was big, that stretch, the same stretch we're talking about with regard to Mulcahy, MSU, I believe it was two consecutive 1-and-1 opportunities.
Yeah, ends, yeah.
One from Joey Hauser, one from Mati Sissoko that they miss. In a tight game, man, and MSU shot decently. They were 11 for 14 as a team from three. So it's not like it was a disaster, but those two guys, those were big misses. I mean, there's just no other way to put it, because MSU not only misses that shot, they don't get the opportunity for the second. So you lose the opportunity to have as much as 4 points. That was huge in a game that was that tight. Huge. And it came at the same time when Rutgers, through Mulcahy primarily, started finding itself offensively. That was the ball game. I mean, it really was. That's where it was won. And I'm not saying those two free throws lost Michigan State the game, but they sure didn't help because of the timing.
It's certainly harder to maintain contact. And then now you're in a situation where you're pretty much down to three possessions, and it's going
to
be really tough.
You had to do what they were doing,
yeah,
which was fouling immediately to extend the game. It was a sound strategy. I mean, I hate seeing it. It makes for awful viewing, no matter who's playing. But they had to do it. And it actually, you know, it semi-worked in the sense that they got some misses. I mean, Rutgers is a good free throw shooting team. Look, Spencer and Mulcahy are both plus 90% guys. They were a combined 13 for 18
yeah.
in this game. McConnell is a high 70s guy. He was 4 for 7. So they missed, you know, the strategy worked well enough to at least allow Michigan State to theoretically get the job done. But the bottom line was that strategy would have only played out in their favor if they could have generated a couple of turnovers. That's what they really needed, and they just couldn't do it out of the press. But you're between a rock and a hard place once you get under a minute. Do you let them waste however many seconds it takes in the backcourt to try to force the turnover? Or do you grab them and foul them immediately and live with what happens on the line? And MSU obviously was opting to foul immediately. And then when they were past that point, they just couldn't get a mistake. So,
yeah. And you have to be able to score too. And they just hadn't been scoring. I mean, it's hard for, I think, a team that is having trouble shooting to really start shooting well at the very in the last minute of the game, you know?
They hadn't been, but they actually were okay in that last minute or so. I mean, Pierre hits a three. It was meaningless, but
yeah,
Walker hit one too.
Yeah.
Walker hit some shots. You know, they did manage to get something, but yeah, it's a lot of things have to go right for you in that stretch. And I mean, considering the kind of free throw shooting team Rutgers has, it's amazing that MSU got the opportunities they did down the stretch, because you can't count on guys like Mulcahy and Spencer missing free throws.
No.
And they did.
Yeah.
They missed enough. But yeah, I think those were the four biggest things to me. I mean, MSU did some positive things in this game. All right. They played reasonably good defense, although again, not nearly as good in the second half. And the rebounding job, which you mentioned,
fantastic,
was actually great.
Yeah.
Great. I mean, complete turnaround from the game at Breslin. If you would have told me that MSU would have had a rebounding advantage in this game, I would have figured their odds of victory were very high. Didn't work out that way. Just which it mirrors the game at Breslin in a sense, because if you would have told me in that game that they would have been pounded the way they were on the glass, I wouldn't have liked their odds.
It's real interesting because you look at that. If you look at the box score and didn't, you know, I didn't tell you any of this. I said Michigan State shot 34.5%, Rutgers 37.5%. They both shot 19% from three. Michigan State 78.6% from line, Rutgers 64.7%. Michigan State out rebounds Rutgers by 10. Turnovers are about even, 14 to 11. You would hear that line, you're like, well, you know, Michigan State wins, except of course. You know, you have the free throw disparity of 20 more free throws for Rutgers,
yeah,
and partly because of the end of the game. But it's very interesting how that it's statistically, again, that first game you would have said Rutgers should have won because of 18 offensive rebounds.
But let's also keep it in perspective. So the end of the game, I'd have to go back and see how many free throws Rutgers shot in the final 2 minutes when MSU went to that. I'm going to guess it was around 10.
Probably 10 or 12, yeah.
Or so.
I agree.
Okay. So MSU was still, even if you take that away, operating at about a 10 free throw attempt disadvantage.
Yes.
Now that's not unusual for a road game, although this wasn't a true road game. And here's my complaint though. It's the same one we usually go to. Inconsistency in how you're calling the game. In the first half, we had that stretch where I don't think a foul was called for the first 6 minutes or so of the game. Broadcasting team was commenting on it. And then we get into a situation where MSU was in the bonus with a little under 12 to play in the second half. Rutgers quickly joined them, and both teams were in the double bonus with a lot of time left.
Yeah.
I don't think the game got more physical in the second half. I think it was played the same way largely over the 40 minutes. So why? You know, that's the question I would ask. Why? And it's the part that has to drive coaches and players absolutely insane. Because, and you saw, and I'm not excusing it entirely, you know, Michigan State, if you, anytime a guy gets called for a foul, usually there's going to be some level of disbelief more often than not. But Michigan State's guys were just incredulous at times. And I'm not going to say it's that there wasn't any contact on at least some of those calls, but it's the fact that they were letting it go both ways in the first half, and then you start calling it. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's a problem with consistency. And if you don't have consistency, then you have a very hard time figuring out how it is you've got to play. This is the main thing. It's not so much the blown calls or favoritism or that stuff that really bothers me. It's consistency. It's you call a play the same way all the time. And I don't think they did that. I really don't. And that's not, it doesn't mean Michigan State lost the game because of it. It's just another feature of what was a frustrating watch, you know, and I'm sure a very frustrating game to play.
Yeah. And it makes it very difficult to watch games that are like this. And, you know, 39, I don't have the splits for fouls. There are 39 fouls called in this game. And we had Graham Couch on the last episode where he's talking about if refs get like 40 foul calls, they should immediately be reviewed, you know, by the league office.
23-16 MSU had the foul disadvantage.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's almost like the refs, and this happens almost every game, that the halves are called differently. It's either tight and then it's not tight, or it's not tight and then it's tight. It's never consistently tight. It feels like it's never consistently not tight. Like, I thought it was fine. The teams were just shooting like garbage the first 12, 14 minutes of the game. Really? It was fine. Whatever.
Yeah. If anybody wants to try to make the case that, oh, the offenses struggled in the first half because the defenses were allowed to just go out there and mug, no. I would encourage you to take another look. I know on Michigan State's part, they missed a lot of open shots. Rutgers missed some too. I mean, Cam Spencer, once again, he got some good looks in the first half, especially, and just didn't hit them. So it wasn't that. It's just teams weren't hitting shots. It was bad offense.
Yeah, no question.
To flip a switch and just call a game that differently, I that's the stuff to me that I think the sport needs to deal with. You can whine and cry about freedom of movement and hook and hold and all this other nonsense that they get on a high horse about. But man, I don't care so much what calls you make, just make them consistently. That's it. Because if you do that, then teams can find a level. They can find the appropriate way to play. So it won't be this ugly.
Let's talk about one bright point, I guess. I will just say, you know, Malik Hall looked pretty good. Offensively, he was kind of a mess.
Well, he struggled mightily
offensive,
on offense.
Yeah, I want to caveat there. I thought he was pretty good defensively. He got beat by Mulcahy sort of end, but, you know, like you said, Mulcahy was kind of taking everyone to town at the end of the game. But 13 rebounds, 6 of them offensive, 7 defensive rebounds, 3 assists, no turnovers, or 3 turnovers.
3 turnovers.
And, but I thought he was really good, active in the boards. That's kind of what we expected from him this season, to be better rebounder. And so that was encouraging. I mean, I know he's 1 of 9 from the field. It was, you know, 0 for 2 for 3 and just hit a pair of the line. So offensively, he was kind of a mess where he's just kind of just doing the backing down, fall away. And they just weren't falling today at all. So I don't know. I mean, but I was encouraged at least in part by his play.
Well, look, anytime you go out and get 6 offensive rebounds, that's, you've had yourself a game. If you would have given me that number ahead of time, I sure would have figured he would have been better than 1 for 9 from the floor, though, because I would have figured 2 or 3 of those would have been putbacks.
Right.
So yeah, that's unfortunate, but they did get some stuff. They got a Tyson Walker 3.
Yep.
Off of one of those offensive rebounds. So they did get some stuff as a result of it. I mean, obviously you can't question his activity level and his toughness. Those are both embodied in that stat. It was just not a good day offensively, but he's hardly the only one. The thing I guess you got to give him credit for, I mean, he remained assertive, which I want to see. You know, 1 for 9, it's unfortunate, but I would rather see him continue to keep knocking at the door, you know?
Yeah.
So one of those days.
Yeah. You want to see him just like, you know, Joey and Tyson, you want to see those guys continue shooting and looking for their shot. I mean, you don't want them taking bad shots, but, you know, I thought also interestingly, Rutgers would kind of throw that zone at Michigan State. And this is maybe more a reflection of AJ, because I feel like he was in the game most of the times this happened, that there was just not a very good way of attacking that zone. Like they were either surprised or they were just terrible, unable to sort of get any sort of rhythm. And again, this is a team that shoots really well from outside. So you think you're going to get looks. So you get in the lane and then pass out and around one or two passes. You should have an open look and should be bearing those, but they just weren't able to get it to work at all.
It's absolutely on him. It's failure. It's a failure of recognition. That is on your point guard. That is a primary part of the job. And I just kept watching it. I just kept thinking to myself, get into it. Meaning get into their offense against man too. Very slow to, and in the first half, MSU actually did a decent job of pushing the ball.
Yeah.
They actually got some transition buckets out of it, which is shocking against Rutgers. Mm-hmm. But especially in the second half, man, it slowed. And that's, again, that's your point guard. He's got to recognize what's going on and get MSU into their offense much quicker. And it wasn't just those occasions where Rutgers would throw their, you know, their half-ass pressure to just to try to eat some clock. It was when there was no pressure too. It was just way too casual. And that's something I would say is on AJ, has been an issue at times his entire career at Michigan State. Is there are times where he is just too casual. He is not locked in. And today was one of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, they look terrible against the zone and there's no excuse for it. They have a good passing team. They have guys who should fit neatly into that role in the middle of the zone. Half the time in those possessions, MSU never even got a guy into the gap.
Right.
I have no idea why. That's not how they teach it. I know that much. So that I'm going to put that down, not to a failure in coaching, but a failure in execution. That's going to be my default assumption. And that comes back to a failure to recognize it and get your guys where they need to be. That's your job. Very, very frustrating. I mean, look, you can tell. You want a number that tells you where Michigan State was at offensively. 9 assists on 20 made baskets.
Yeah, right.
That's not MSU basketball.
Right.
And that's two straight games now that we've seen that. So again, I come back to your floor leader. If he's not going to do a better job, they got, you know, I don't know where it goes.
All right. Why don't we go through the keys of the game and we'll do that right after this brief message. All right. The keys of the game brought to you by Nudge Printing. You can go to nudgeprinting.com to find out their selection and type in the final four into the coupon code for 20% off your order. All right, so first key of the game was Spencer, Cam Spencer. It's been a problem. He's been hot the last couple games, and, you know, he was not very good in East Lansing, and I don't think he was really very good here. 1-for-8 from the field, 0-for-5 from three, hit 5-of-6 from the line, but otherwise pretty much neutralized from the offensive end. So Michigan State, I think that was largely due to Michigan State guarding him. They didn't let him get open. Maybe he had like one open look, but most of them were really contested and tough shots.
He had a couple in the first half where he got loose. And he just missed. But other than that, I agree. They did a very good job of guarding him. And it was, a variety of guys. So that was one thing. We spent a lot of time talking about how they didn't do the job in the second half against Mulcahy. But they absolutely did throughout the whole game, Cam Spencer. And look, Cam Spencer, if I were Rutgers, but no, look, they're in good shape. They've been playing very good basketball. But their schedule gets a lot tougher coming up here. They got road games at Indiana and Illinois coming up. They're going to go through a stretch where I could see, you know, three in their next five as losses pretty easily, which is going to bring them back to the pack a little bit if that happens. But I'll tell you a guaranteed way it happens. If Cam Spencer doesn't get back on track, he's on a bad run. He had that last game against Minnesota prior to this one in the middle of this past week where he shot well. But that's it. He's had starting with the MSU game in East Lansing. He's on a run in 4 or 5 games where he has not been able to hit anything.
Yeah.
And that is a big problem for Rutgers because, you know, as you saw today, this was not, you know, I mean, they're celebrating because they got the win, but they only shot 38% from the floor. That isn't going to get you, that's not going to get the job done often enough. You know, it did today, but it won't, especially when you're playing on the road, it likely won't get the job done. So they've got to figure it. He's got to figure it out. And that's another frustrating thing about losing this one yeah. is you come in with a guy who really has to be at or near the top of your scouting report and you shut him down. You absolutely lock him up and it didn't matter.
Well, do you have to score points in your end too? And to that point, that's not the second key to the game. The threes, Michigan State was dreadful. 4 for 21. Last game, they were 12 of 22 at the Breslin Center. So that's a difference of, you know, 8 threes or 24 points there. So no question. I mean, that was the game right there. Really, if Michigan State shoots better, they win.
Yeah. And you know, again, I don't think Rutgers actually played to their usual level in terms of, or rather Michigan State was able to generate good shots as part of it as well. MSU missed a lot of good looks in those 17 misses, a lot.
Yeah. I would say of the 21 looks, they're probably 16 of them are really good.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. I mean, there are always, you know, there are a couple that might be, you know, there were certainly 2 or 3 down the stretch that were, you know, the last minute or so yeah. that were forced and, you know, but you take those away, it's still a lot of good looks and they just didn't hit enough of them. And again, we've said it many times, if they are not hitting threes better than this, it's hard for them to generate enough points. I mean, just figure what they would have needed, you know, 7 for 21, 33%. So less than what they normally shoot by a significant amount. If they had done that much, you know, they might win this game.
Well, yeah, 12 points would be a big deal, obviously. So number 3, the key to the game, defensive rebounding. Rutgers was lights out in the first game of the Breslin Center with 18 offensive rebounds. This game, they only had 8. Michigan State had 13. Michigan State out-rebounded Rutgers 44-34. You know, somewhat maybe you could say it was due to Mog leaving the game with an injury early and or late in the first half, I think it was. But still, Michigan State really owned the boards. Even before then, it's not like Rutgers was tearing apart like they were at the Breslin Center.
Yeah, no, this was a really good job. And look, I mean, Omarui is the guy you worry about. I think he had 5 last time.
Yep.
And McConnell had 4 by themselves. This time, Cliff had 3. McConnell had none.
Yeah.
Cliff was the only guy they had with double-digit offensive rebound, or I'm sorry, with more than one, multiple offensive rebounds. So that was really good work. By Michigan State, really good work. And hats off, you know, again, if you told me coming in, they do that kind of job, I would have felt pretty good.
Yeah. And you actually were feeling pretty good that at halftime, at least I was, I thought, especially that, yeah. that finger roll at the end. And I'm like, they're not shooting well, but they're bound to shoot a little bit better in the second half. And I don't have the splits in front of me. They didn't. But at least certainly not as good as the first half, which was terrible, which was a terrible shooting performance in the first half. Right. And so,
but it felt like down the stretch of that first half, the last 3-4 minutes, I was feeling like they had found a little yeah. bit of rhythm and coming out of the locker room, the first couple minutes in the second half.
Yeah.
It good. Also felt that way to me. And then it just, yeah, it just disappeared.
Yeah, I think Mulcahy got some sort of foul or something. And maybe it was, I don't know if it was an N1 bucket, but he sort of, that was sort of the turnaround at Rutgers when they were down 6. And I think to your point that he sort of took over that game and that was sort of the difference there.
Well, I actually think it was the 3 he hit.
Oh, yeah, that's the 3. Yeah, yep.
That was big.
Right. So the 4th key to the game was turnovers. You know, there were 14 turnovers by Michigan State. Not terrible. 11 for Rutgers.
No.
Not a lot of points off turnovers, though, for Rutgers. It just lost possessions for Michigan State.
That's true. Rutgers didn't make them pay for it. It wasn't a lot of live ball stuff. But 14 is too much. In a game that you know is going to be low scoring, slow paced, you have to value possessions better than that. You just have to. And, you know, again, AJ Hogard, 5 turnovers. 5.
Yeah. Well, he had the
from
one
from your point guard.
The one can't traveling, one traveling, and then he threw 4 basically kind of away inside in the paint. You know, I think they got credit just for most of the last steals, but I don't know.
You know, bad decisions or a lazy execution. Just too casual at times. That's how I would describe what I was seeing from him. And you just can't have that.
Finally, the fifth key to the game was building and timing. Michigan State got to play Rutgers, not at the rack and at Madison Square Garden, which, you know, I thought it wasn't a huge advantage for Rutgers. I mean, obviously, it helped later in the game when they had a lot of fans. They definitely had the majority of fans there, but I don't know. It wasn't an environment that Michigan State couldn't compete in. And the extra rest, I don't know. Did it help them? Did it?
Well, look, I mean, I didn't think energy was the problem here. I will say that.
Yeah.
I think when you play a game against that team and you do the job MSU did on the boards, you do the job they did mostly on defense, they played hard. I didn't think it was, you know, again, AJ, it's just focus more than energy. I'm not saying he didn't play hard. When I talk about being casual, that's a different thing. But as a team, I thought MSU played hard. They looked energized.
Yeah.
And they played that way. They just, you just never know how much these things are going to matter. We talk about them because sometimes in retrospect, you can look at it. I'll give you a classic example. I watched Northwestern the other night host Michigan, and Northwestern had a small lead in the second half, and then Michigan just steamrolled them from there. I hadn't realized before watching the game that it was Northwestern's 5th game in 10 days.
Yeah.
They looked like it. They did all the things that you expect a tired team to do. Bad shot selection, leaving shots short, lack of defensive focus. None of those things were problems for Michigan State today. I didn't even think the shot selection was a problem. It's just they didn't hit them.
Yeah.
They took good shots generally.
Well, anything else to talk about the game? I guess the only other thing I would say, we didn't talk about Jackson Kohler specifically. I mean, he played 15 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to bring him up.
He did. He looked pretty good out there. You know, had a couple, three rebounds. He's 1 of 3 from the field. I don't know.
I thought he did a nice job. I really did. I thought, you know, they didn't go to him very much in the second. But in that first half, look, the basket he scored was, that's what he can do. He also had a really nice feed to Malik Hall for his 1 bucket, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Against Omorui, now he took advantage of him once or twice, but he also hung in there against him. And I thought he did a pretty good job as a defensive rebounder when he was out there. Like watching him, he got a body on somebody, you know, he cut out as the vernacular goes. So those were good things to see. It was encouraging. He just didn't get enough opportunities in the second half. And really, you know, maybe you can look back at it. It's hard because I know that they figure the more minutes he's out there, the more Rutgers is going to exploit him in the post, which is probably accurate.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But when you're struggling offensively, you know, maybe you try to steal a couple possessions by getting him in there, because he doesn't, look, I mean, there's nobody I've seen yet who in the Big Ten, despite the number of great defensive centers there are a number of them. I haven't seen anybody yet that I feel is just going to lock him up. I mean, we saw it today. He was going up against one of the better defensive centers in the league and he took him to school on the 1 bucket he scored, and Jackson's capable of doing that at any time. So it's not a major deal, but I look back, and it's a lot easier for me to say it sitting here and looking back at the game. And I understand the reasons why MSU went with a heavy dose of Mati.
Yeah.
But in retrospect, might you have been better served to try to get a couple of buckets out of Kohler? And there's no guarantee he would have scored, of course, but I like where he's been at for the last 3 weeks or so. You know, he's not going to score every time. He'll miss some shots, but he's looking to score, and he looks so much more confident and comfortable out there, as witnessed by the spin move and reverse that he scored today. You know, he can do those things against anybody.
Yeah, he expects to make, he expects the best, this time. Finally, I guess, you know, Trey Holloman, he seems to kind of hit a little bit of freshman wall, 7 minutes, struggling. A turnover.
Yes.
He's really having some problems at the 0-for-3 from the field too. He took a couple ill-advised shots.
Yep.
And then Pierre Brooks played spot, you know, 6 minutes, 2-of-2, 1-for-1 from three.
Good game.
And I thought,
him.
Yeah, I thought defensively he looked really solid in the first half. There were no obvious sort of lapses or anything like that. So, you know, unfortunately for him, he's to the point now where Malik Hall's back. And so his opportunity to get minutes is limited.
In the first game or in the first half, he made one really good read.
Coming back and helping. I saw that play come back.
The ball went out of bounds. He didn't come up with the steal, but it was a great read. And I'm with you. I thought that Pierre did some nice things, you know, again, limited minutes. And I'm not ready to complain about that because I understand, you know, you could say, well, Malik Hall was 1-for-9, but Malik Hall also grabbed 13 rebounds and he's critical to your team and he's not going to go 1-for-9 very often.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jaden Akins is going to be better than he was today most of the time. So there's just not a lot of opportunity for Pierre right now. So I'm not, believe me, I'm far from saying, oh, you got to find ways to get him more minutes. But I will say this, a game like today is something that he can build on, hopefully. And if he's taking that into practice, then, you know, hopefully that is going to force MSU to think about using him more if he's playing productively.
And one would hope the next game is against Maryland on Tuesday night at the back of the Breslin Center. You would imagine that he'd have a little more opportunities to play there because it's a little bit smaller lineup too, I think, than Rutgers. So
it is.
I think, you know, it's encouraging that how he looked today. And you know, this is the point now. Michigan State's got 8 games remaining in the Big Ten schedule, and a lot of them are easier games, not as challenging venues, although I guess you could argue this is not as bad as the rack. But it's still, this is probably the hardest game they had left in the schedule. Which they are losing, completely. You know, on the road, and a game that, you know, we're talking about this, and boy, I mean, it was there if they had just played a little bit better early in the first half or even in the second half, you know. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, there were lots of game that was played. I mean, Michigan State's biggest lead was 8. I think Rutgers' biggest lead was 9, and they were both briefly held.
Yeah.
So this game was played in an extremely tight window the whole way, and yeah, you could point to any stretch of that game and say, boy, if you'd just been a little bit better, mostly offensively.
Yeah.
Because again, even with pointing out the Mulcahy stuff, MSU played well enough defensively to win this game. I think over the course of 40 minutes, I don't have a lot of criticism about the way they played defensively other than a few possessions. And look, that's going to happen in any game. You're never going to bat 1,000. You know, sometimes and also give credit to the other guys. Paul Mulcahy, he's a good player.
Yeah.
He's a smart player. He knows what he does well, and he finds ways to get himself into those positions. So, you know, some of it's him too, but, yeah, I just felt like, the opportunity was there to get it. It's very disappointing that they didn't, but if you are looking for a silver lining, it won't be any tougher when you combine venue and quality of opponent. It won't be any tougher. I mean, I'm sorry. You can talk about Michigan and the rivalry and all that stuff. I've seen enough wins at Chrysler over the years. That building doesn't mean very much. It really doesn't. And their team is not, they're a team Michigan State should beat, in my opinion. Ohio State in free fall.
Yeah.
That's again, you know, Nebraska, they're better than they've been. That's still one you really feel like you should get. And I guess I'm forgetting
Maryland, Minnesota, and Indiana.
Oh, at
home.
Iowa.
Yeah. At Iowa.
Iowa's the other one. Yeah. You know,
that'd be a tough game.
Look, certainly a team you can lose to, but if you're asking me which of two teams between Rutgers and Iowa you'd rather face, I'll take Iowa all day.
So can we talk about the Iowa thing real briefly, about the student thing with the Illinois?
Sure.
So people are not aware of the story. Illinois student section, the Orange Crush, tried to purchase, they purchased tickets to the Iowa athletic office using the nonprofit discount and posing as the Illinois Boys and Girls Club. And Iowa found out about that, canceled their order, and then gave those tickets away to, they refunded the Orange Crush, and they gave the tickets to, I think, the Boys and Girls Club of Cedar Rapids, which is 20 minutes north of Iowa City. And then, you know, the Orange Crush was upset because, of course, they had rented buses and they were, they had like 600 students. They had a lot of people coming to the game, I think. I guess they do this once in a while. And they were upset because, of course, they normally do this to some opposing, you know, they have some sort of road trip. I think oftentimes with Iowa, just because it's so close. And they are not allowed, Iowa does not sell them the tickets if it finds out that it's the Orange Crush, even though they are technically a nonprofit because they do raise money for various, you know, problems. I don't know. I mean, what do you think about the fact that, what do you think about the whole thing? I mean, I think it's going to be a kind of a charged game today, this afternoon.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. I also have kind of a hard time picking a hero between those two fan bases.
Yeah, I guess that's,
I don't like either one. Illinois, look, when Illinois get, you want to talk about a fan base and a program that doesn't handle success well, even a modicum of it, that's your exhibit A right there. And you know how I feel about Iowa, but I will say in this case, I think Iowa was absolutely in the right. I mean, that was a fascinating thing to watch play out on social media. And I think it won't be, but it should be a lesson to media members or just regular people even out there to not shoot from the hip with an opinion unless you feel you've gotten the complete story.
Yep.
Because the initial story came out, the Illinois Orange Crush group put out this statement that they're, you know, basically what you had just said, leaving out the boys and girls pose bit, that they had bought these tickets. They'd been planning this for months. They had all these buses rented and Iowa just pulled them.
Yeah.
Within, I don't know, half hour, an hour, shortly, Iowa came out and explained what had been done. And all of a sudden your view of it should, if you're a reasonable person, change, because that you shouldn't be rewarded for using a nonprofit to try, you know, I mean, look, I'm sorry, but that's, I have no problem, by the way, with a university choosing to deny as best as they can selling tickets to fans from the opposite program, from the visitor. I have no problem with it. Some people may, I have none, zero. That's your building. That's your campus. You do with it what you want. And that includes banning opposing fans in my view. You know, again, as best you can. The problem is you've always got a reseller market that isn't controlled.
Yeah.
So it's not like somebody from Illinois that really wanted to go to the game is going to be unable to get a ticket. Now, I suppose the Illinois complaint now is that, well, they lost all this money because they'd rented these buses. So presumably they lost deposits,
yeah,
or whatever.
They lied
else.
About the application. So that's,
they lied. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah. That's
on them.
Completely wipes that out. So in this case, I think I'm with Iowa. But it's all nonsense.
It's,
I mean,
it's interesting because at, you know, Michigan State every year, there's a section of Michigan students who buy a block of tickets. And right. I assume that Michigan State's okay with that because they're always pretty much in the same place every seat, which is always by us. It's section two over. So I don't know if it works between our two schools. Like if they decide that, does the Izone go to have sent some students over too? I mean,
they,
I don't
do.
Know.
There, but I don't know if it's organized. I mean, having been at Chrysler last year, yeah, there were Izone members there. And it's the same deal. They're usually in the upper deck, although, you know, the difference is at Chrysler, you can get upper deck tickets for pretty much any game you want because they don't sell out
right
ever.
Yeah.
But because it's a bad basketball fan base, but, and that's the truth.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't seem to be a big deal. But again, if Michigan State said, hey, we're not selling to the Maze Rage, fine. I'm okay with that. And vice versa. If they decide they're not going to sell to his own members in blocks, great. I'm totally fine with that. I don't think anybody owes anyone anything, you know, especially in basketball. You're talking about dramatically lesser capacities than, say, football.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
So, you know, Yeah, I mean, sorry, Orange Crush.
You crushed their dreams.
But yeah, these are, you know, these games where I could really, I'd be fine with a meteor striking and both franchise, both programs losing. But on that story, at least, yeah, I got to go with the Franz.
The Hawkeyes win on a technical knockout. All right. So, again, one more reminder that we actually are having $5 gift cards are available through Nudge Printing. So you can get these for free from us if you leave a written review on your podcast player, take a screenshot, email it to me. I've already sent one of these out already. Email it to me at eric@tffinots.com. Then you can get the $5 gift card. You can also still get your 20% off your checkout at typing in Final Four at nudgeprinting.com. You can check out their stuff. It's really cool. Totally worth it. And again, Michigan State alums is doing the right thing here with Michigan-made products. But until next time, for the Maryland preview, the Final Four is on the schedule. Go Green. ¶¶